This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, a wave of campus divestment hearings as the student government at Loyola University in Chicago passes divestment, while the University of Michigan student government decides to indefinitely table their vote in what students say is an attempt to shut down debate. We'll speak to two students at the University of Michigan who are part of a sustained sit-in to protest the student government's decision.
I think there was a lot of shock that the student government had the power to just silence hundreds of people and didn't even have the decency or the courage to open this to a discussion.
We're going to sit here until our demands are met.
Also, Northeastern University in Boston suspends the Students for Justice in Palestine chapter after a mock eviction notice action. We'll speak to SJP member Max Geller about how the students are fighting back against repression.
Every SJP in the country have encountered some forms of suppression on their campus, and one of our goals as a chapter right now is to link up with all the other SJPs who are dealing with their own suppression and support and be supported by them in any ways we can.
And Rami Elmigari reports from Gaza during local Israeli Apartheid Week events and interviews scholar and activist Haider Aid. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, associate editor for the Electronic Intifada in Oakland, with Rami Elmigari in Gaza. On Tuesday, March 18th, Loyola University Chicago became the first Jesuit university in the United States to pass a student government resolution to divest from companies complicit in aiding the Israeli occupation in Palestine. The Senate legislation calls upon Loyola University Chicago to remove its holdings from eight specific companies that play active roles in the human rights abuses committed by the Israeli government. In a statement, Students for Justice in Palestine say that the first corporation listed, Caterpillar, sustains the occupation by providing tools and bulldozers to destroy Palestinian infrastructure such as homes, neighborhoods, and agricultural fields. Caterpillar tools also aid in the expansion of illegal settlements, as declared by the United Nations. The second corporation, General Electric, manufactures engines used for the same helicopters that violate human rights by attacking Palestinian civilians. Hewlett-Packard, or HP, also aids in the systematic oppression of Palestinians by providing discriminatory identification systems used by Israeli military checkpoints, and profits from mass incarceration. G4S, Raytheon, Elbit Systems, SodaStream, and Veolia are the remaining companies that complete the list. Students for Justice in Palestine adds that by passing this piece of legislation, the student body at Loyola University Chicago is asking for further and constant examination of Loyola's assets for future investments. In the policy statement on socially responsible investing, the Board of Trustees claims to commit to a social mission with the promotion of social justice. Divesting from these companies remains true to the statement and ensures that Loyola is not profiting from companies that contradict Jesuit traditions and values. Senator Nashiha Alam supports this in her speech of affirmation by saying, quote, "The university has a responsibility to filter out investments and have an investment screen. We, the students, are responsible for making these ethical investments." Students for Justice in Palestine at Loyola University Chicago has been working on a divestment campaign since 2012. Meanwhile, the student body at the University of West England passed a referendum in support of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. This same week, students at Arizona State University in Phoenix introduced a divestment bill against Caterpillar Corporation to the student government, which decided to table the bill indefinitely without discussion. And in a similar incident at the University of Michigan on Tuesday, student activists with the longstanding Palestine solidarity group Students Allied for Freedom and Equality had gathered the public support of 36 other student organizations who signed on to an op-ed in the Michigan Daily setting out the case for divestment. Reporting from the debate, the Electronic Intifada's Ali Abunima said that, quote, "The number of students who turned out to watch last night's debate was so large that the assembly meeting had to be moved from its usual venue to an enormous ballroom in the Michigan Union Building." Several representatives of the Central Student Government, or CSG, repeatedly noted that it was the largest turnout for a student assembly meeting they had ever seen. The Michigan Daily put the number quite credibly at hundreds. Abunima said that 10 students who were not assembly members, 5 supporting and 5 opposing the resolution, were allowed to address the representatives. Each of the students supporting divestment spoke passionately and eloquently. But the anti-divestment speakers appeared to be well-coached and on message, depicting the divestment bill as divisive and used the terms peace and both sides. These points were well-calculated to appeal to liberal sensitivities about dialogue and fear of confrontation, Abunima added. In the end, the student government tabled the divestment bill indefinitely. The pro-divestment crowd poured out of the room and held an impromptu rally outside the building, which the Electronic Intifada captured on video. The next day, on Wednesday, a group of approximately 100 students at the University of Michigan began a sit-in in the student government building to call for a vote on divestment. Joining us on Thursday to talk about the current sit-in were Suhan Najjar and Noor Subhani, students at the University of Michigan who are part of the sit-in strike. I began by asking them to describe their sit-in and what their demands are. This is Suhan Najjar.
So we're in the Central Student Government Chambers. They typically have their meetings here in this room, and we've been here since yesterday until 2 a.m., and we had to leave because they called campus security, and at 2 a.m. the building closes, and there were some complications in that they were going to do. There was a possibility of doing an entire sweep where they would just arrest everyone that was here. So for the safety of, you know, the students involved, we decided to leave, and it was after we got Noor is going to talk about the demands, but the president of CSG came in to state an apology, which we posted online for people to hear. He didn't apologize at first until some of the students, Palestinians, called him out on that, and then he apologized for not objecting. And he also, we asked that he listen to the students. So he came right before 2 a.m., like 5 minutes before the building closed, after we pushed and stressed and demanded that he come into the room and listen. And so on.
Yeah, so like Soha said, we've been here since yesterday at 7 p.m. And our demands, we have a list of demands to end the sit-in. So I can just go through them. The first one is that the Central Student Government repeal its decision to postpone the presentation of the divestment resolution indefinitely. And the reasoning behind this is that CSG must stop selectively silencing student voices. And the second one is that the Central Student Government make all of its meetings open. There should be no closed sessions when issues affect the student body, especially when there is broad-based public interest. And this came out of the fact that there was a motion to have a closed session at the beginning of Tuesday's meeting. And the third one is that,
And at the end, yeah. There was a motion.
And the third one is that the Central Student Government does not limit the student speaking time. And by doing so, the assembly is stifling a vibrant and much needed discussion against the will of those who elected them. And the community affairs portion of the meeting must be extended to allow students maximum speaking time. On Tuesday at the meeting, there were over 200 supporters for the resolution, and they only allowed 5 people from each side to speak in the community matters, community affairs portion. The fourth demand is that all Central Student Government representatives and executives participate in a divestment teach-in in order to be better informed of the resolution that they refuse to educate themselves about. And the fifth demand is that the Central Student Government issue a public apology both in writing and in person for inviting Palestinian students to trigger themselves and expose their vulnerabilities only to dismiss their narratives, negotiate their humanity, and erase their existence on campus by repeatedly saying that this isn't an issue that students care about and things like that.
Wow. That's the voice of Noor Subhani and also Suhan Najjar from the University of Michigan. Can you guys talk about the feeling during the divestment meeting on Tuesday? And actually, before you let us know what happened, what the divestment resolution called for?
So the divestment resolution called for the for the student government to launch an investigation. It wasn't even directly to divest from these companies, but to launch an investigation into our companies, our university's investments with certain companies. And there were four companies. Among them was Caterpillar and GE. That was the divestment bill. It was the four companies, and it was to launch an investigation into that. And to go into like what happened and like our emotions. I know for myself, I mean, I'm a Palestinian, I'm from the Gaza Strip, so I was also an author of the resolution. So we were supposed to be given 10 minutes to introduce the resolution. Before we could even speak, like I went up to the room and I was supposed to be the first person to speak and sort of share my narrative about my aunt who I lost a couple of years ago. Before I could even speak, they just shut the door in our face. I was standing in front of the room, so I can see the emotions in the room. And I was specifically looking at the Palestinians who had spoken earlier during the community affairs portion, who had just shared their stories, and some of them were like on the verge of tears. And I could see how I just like looked at them, and the fact that our student government silenced them. And then I was given 1 minute to sort of speak, because a representative can yield their time to someone else. I only was allotted 1 minute. And in that 1 minute, my student government was basically asking me to beg them to listen to me. So there were a lot of emotions in the room, and I think that's what caused the breakout after, for people to push, to start chanting divest.
I think from behind there was a red line that was separating the assembly from the gallery, and from standing behind that red line, I think there was a lot of shock that the student government like had the power to just silence hundreds of people and didn't even have the decency or the courage to open this to a discussion. And I think that's what everybody wanted. I don't think there was an expectation for a vote either way, but just a vote or a discussion about it. So I think definitely throughout the meeting, a lot was said about how this isn't a student issue that's relevant. And it kind of seemed rehearsed, because if you looked at the room, it clearly was relevant, and everybody there cared about it. So I think it was just a feeling that the student government was not responding to the student body at all. They were just kind of insisting on like maintaining the status quo that they thought that's what they were there to uphold.
Noor and Suha, how long are you prepared to sit in, and how many of the sit-in strikers are with you?
So yesterday we had about 100. 100 students came from when we started at 6 p.m. We were supposed to start at 7, but the room was open, so we came in a little bit earlier. So we had about 100, and today it's fluctuating. Like, people are coming in and out. Right now the room has about 40 people in there, and we were expecting around 10 to 15 people every hour, so this is a great turnout. We're going to sit here until our demands are met. We're asking for the repeal, and the repeal has to come with a vote by the CSG, and they typically have their meetings Tuesday nights. So we're not involved in the logistics of whatever they do, whatever they decide to make sure that our demands are met. But they are considering having an emergency meeting. And if not, if they don't have our demands met, we're going to be here until next Tuesday when they vote on it again.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to tell the Electronic Intifada audience about your sit-in, your demands, and what your plans are next? How people can support and learn more about the sit-in strike?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, the hashtag is UMDivest and hashtag UMDivestSitIn. I think showing their support by continuously tweeting, because, you know, our administration is following our tweets, and the central student government is following all of that on Facebook and Twitter and social media in general. So that's probably where we get our most support from, people around the country. And then from people close by, to just come and show up, especially if we're going to notify everyone of the meeting, whether it happens on Friday or if it happens on Tuesday, and to just come out and show support again that this is what we want, this is what our campus wants.
Yeah, I think just one thing to mention that has really been like remarkable about this whole process is the allyhood. We have so many allies, non-Palestinian students who showed up at the meeting on Tuesday and who have been here continuously at the sit-in. And I think they really showed us what allyhood means. So I think those people, we really appreciate that too.
And of course, anti-Palestinian, anti-BDS groups, as well as student governments who are trying to suppress
divestment resolutions keep calling this movement divisive. So you are proving them wrong, of course. Suhan Najjar and Noor Subhani of University of Michigan, thank you so much for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We turn now to student activism and repression in Boston. 2 weeks ago, Northeastern University suspended the on-campus chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine until 2015, after the group held a direct action during Israeli Apartheid Week, in which they distributed mock eviction notices to students' dorm rooms. Student members have been permanently banned from holding positions in recognized student organizations unless they undergo what amounts to university-supervised re-education. And the administration initially informed two of the members who took part in the action, the only two women of color in the group, that they faced disciplinary charges that could result in suspension or expulsion. Last year, Northeastern SJP member Max Geller told the Electronic Intifada how he had received death threats over his advocacy work as a member of SJP. The persons behind the threats were linked to the Orwellian-named right-wing Zionist group Americans for Peace and Tolerance, a Boston-based outfit run by Charles Jacobs, who has orchestrated a litany of attacks on Northeastern SJP members and faculty supportive of Palestinian rights. Jacobs and Americans for Peace and Tolerance, along with other right-wing Zionist groups, have pressured Northeastern University to punish SJP and its members. In a clear indication, Geller told the Electronic Intifada, that outside groups and wealthy university benefactors have a disproportionate amount of influence on student speech rights. Earlier this week, SJP and more than 30 allied groups held a large demonstration on the edge of Northeastern's campus, demanding speech rights and a reinstatement of SJP. Joining us on Thursday to talk about all of this was Max Geller. I asked Max to talk about the demonstration in which hundreds took part on the edge of campus earlier this week and what message students and the wider community sent to the administration during that march.
We had about 200 people show up either by walking out of their classes at Northeastern or marching on the campus from outside. We had an event where 30 different organizations, including other schools' SJP chapters, including Boston area human rights organizations, and a few labor unions, all sponsor the march to restore SJP and to protect student speech rights. I think there's a lot of people who are taking this crackdown on our and assault on our speech rights very seriously. They're very troubled by it.
Since the suspension, you filed an appeal. What's happened with that so far?
We filed it last Friday, and we have since heard nothing officially, but from statement by the university, it would seem that they have not been swayed. There are, though our appeal is still in process, there's no sign that the school is really taking it seriously. They announced the other day that this suspension of SJP is a result of careful consideration. So that indicates to me that they're not really considering our appeal, even though it's still pending.
Max, Northeastern has dropped one of the three charges against the two women of color members of SJP. What do you attribute to that? And do they still face suspension or possible expulsion for this nonviolent direct action?
The students are sort of now only facing what's known as deferred suspension, which would put them in a position where they would, the strongest formal warning. But deferred suspension does not mean you have to leave campus or can't be on campus. It's just if you do anything else, you're liable to be suspended for the previous offense. But that is a clear step down from what they're talking beforehand about, where actual expulsion or suspension was on the table. And the university is continuously backtracked. It first backed from the expulsion level offenses and publicly stated no one was getting expelled or suspended. And now they've also, following more pressure, dropped one of the charges. And the charge that was dropped was the one that was sort of directly pertaining to free speech. So they no longer think they can win on holding us responsible for doing what everyone else does, but they're still charging the students with violating dorm policy, which was the violation took place when they left the side of other SJPers who were distributing flyers. So the school is, though they are backtracking and though they seem to be aware of the free speech implications of punishing students for handing out flyers, they're still interested in enforcing a seldom enforced policy known as the dorm policy of not leaving your guest's side. And this is to sort of prevent people from getting alcohol poisoning without supervision, but it's being enforced against because I think of outside pressure and the unwillingness of groups like Hillel and some of the more extreme elements of the Boston Jewish community from letting us off the hook. The Zionist community of Boston expects us to get punished, and they demand that we get punished.
Max, you and other SJP members have gotten a new round of death threats and violent intimidation following the right-wing Zionist media coverage of Northeastern's suspension of SJP. Can you talk about that?
The same sort of cast of characters from the David Horowitz Freedom Projects, Front Page Mag, and the an employee of Americans for Peace and Tolerance have been putting out articles which are designed to discredit us and make it seem like we support violent jihad against America and Israel. I don't know about any sort of how those common threads are going on because I'm not reading those articles, but they're out there and they're being promoted heavily on Facebook. So it seems as though Americans for Peace and Tolerance paid enough money to advertise this article to every student or every person who is affiliated with Northeastern University as an attempt to discredit SJP and to distract from the sort of free speech issues surrounding our suspension. They have been promoting articles they've written which are full of factual errors to somehow smear and discredit us. But again, I'm not really paying any attention to those because haters are going to hate, and I don't actually have time to get upset about this.
Max, can you talk about the kind of legal advocacy that SJP has garnered from either local or national civil rights organizations and legal?
We are receiving advice from three different groups, and they're all sort of working in concert to help us and advise us. The Massachusetts American Civil Liberties Union chapter, Mass National Lawyers Guild chapter have teamed with the Palestine Legal Solidarity Support Project to advise us about what possible legal options our suspension has. But I want to sort of state that no decision in that front has been made and that there's plenty of non-legal sort of grassroots organizing work that we still need to be done. And I think that's where the amazing turnout yesterday came in. It's that kind of thing that's going to put more pressure on the university at this point. But again, all legal options are being considered.
Finally, Max, what's next for Northeastern SJP and how can people get involved?
I mean, what's next with Northeastern SJP is a twofold operation. We have both sort of organizational work to do in order to broaden our struggle. I mean, I know that the Northeastern adjunct professors are having a real difficult time trying to unionize right now. And that is a freedom of speech, freedom of expression issue as much as our suspension is. And so part of the work we have to do is to sort of broaden our struggles and broaden the sort of awareness of what happens when unpopular speech is silenced on a campus. And the other aspect is to continue to sort of lean on the other SJPs around the country. I know that our direct action yesterday and the direct action the University of Michigan followed up with following their inability to and in their undemocratic ways of silencing their divestment vote, they're now sitting in. And I think the sort of movement towards direct action is an exciting prospect and one that we are really paying close attention to around the country. And so every SJP in the country have encountered some forms of suppression on their campus. And one of our goals as a chapter right now is to link up with all the other SJPs who are dealing with their own suppression and support and be supported by them in any ways we can.
All right. We're going to, of course, keep updated on the situation as things develop. As always, Max Geller, if people want to learn more about Northeastern SJP, they can go to northeasternsjp.org. We will be back with you shortly. Thank you so much, Max.
My pleasure. Have a nice day.
We now go to the Gaza Strip. In March every year, hundreds of universities worldwide mark Israeli Apartheid Week, a series of events and actions in protest of Israel's apartheid policies in Palestine. In the Gaza Strip on March 9th, activists with the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement launched this year's Israeli Apartheid Week. The Electronic Intifada's Rami El-Megadi has more from Gaza.
Representatives of 170 local society organizations in both the West Bank and Gaza Strip kicked off Israeli Apartheid Week. In Gaza City, about 200 participants, including BDS activists, NGO representatives, university students, and others, attended a special launching ceremony at the Palestinian Red Crescent Society in Gaza City. Maram Humeid is a local BDS activist and a recent university graduate in Gaza. This is the third year she has attended Israeli Apartheid Week events.
Regarding the experience of the South Africa, it's the same here and it's more difficult here. So I see that there is an end for the Israeli apartheid soon.
Although the academic and economic boycott of Israel has been gaining momentum internationally over the past few years, particularly following Israel's massive Operation Cast-Lead attack against Gaza in December 2008 and January 2009, the Israeli government and Israel supporters have labeled the BDS movement as being anti-Semitic. Rosa Schiano is an international solidarity activist from Italy and has spent 2 years in Gaza. She is also a BDS activist.
No, this is we are just denouncing the violations of the Israeli government. Why you make confusion? Because it is their aim to make confusion and saying that we are anti-Semitic. No, but this is the game that they are doing, not just with the BDS movement, but in general with the solidarity movement for Palestinians.
The week-long Israeli Apartheid Week of Resistance in Gaza involves workshops and film screenings about apartheid and BDS in different regions of Gaza. The closing ceremony will be held at Gaza's abandoned seaport, which has been under Israeli blockade for more than 7 years now. Rami El-Migari, Electronic Intifada, Gaza.
Rami also sat down with Dr. Haider Eid in Gaza during Israeli Apartheid Week to talk about the events and the BDS campaign in occupied Palestine and across the world. Aid is a university professor of English and a leading BDS activist in Gaza.
Initially, the Israeli Apartheid Week activities started in Gaza back in 2009. And this is the fifth time we are holding Israel Apartheid Week activities in the Gaza Strip. This year, actually, I think that this year they are considered to be the most important events amongst events held all over Palestine, 1948, and in the West Bank, because the first day, the opening day of the Israel Apartheid, we had two strong recorded messages from one of the most renowned anti-apartheid heroes, a comrade of Nelson Mandela, who spent more than 21 years in jail with Nelson Mandela, who was arrested in 1964, who attended the Rivonia trial with Nelson Mandela, and spent, I think, more than 15 years on Robben Island as well. Mr. Ahmad Kathrada. And the message we got from Ahmed Kathrad, of course, a recorded message from Ahmed Kathrad, because he couldn't visit Gaza, because, you know, Gaza has been under siege since 2007. But the second recorded message we got was from one of the most renowned BDS activists in the world and in Palestine in particular, Mr. Omar al-Barghouti, who's a member of the secretary of the Boycott National Committee, the BNC, and one of the co-founders of PACB, the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. And both Mr. Kathrada and Barghouti, in fact, concentrated on the fact that Gaza is isolated and under siege because of the fact that we, residents of Gaza, are not born to Jewish mothers, i.e., it is under siege because of the apartheid nature of the state of Israel. Gaza has been suffering, as I said, since 2007, and based on international human rights reports and United Nations reports, what is happening to Gaza right now, and this is the importance of Israel of holding Israel apartheid wiki activities in Gaza, is Gaza has been transformed into the largest concentration camp on earth, or as even Beit Salem, which is a mainstream Israel human rights organization, called it the largest open-air prison on earth. And one of the messages that we have been trying to send out to the international community is that Gaza is going through what Professor Richard Falk calls a prelude to genocide, or what Ilan Pappé, the progressive Israeli historian Ilan Pappé, says, or rather calls it, slow motion genocide. And for us to be going through this slow motion genocide and at the same time celebrate, or rather hold, Israel Apartheid Week activities is a message in itself, that in spite of all these crimes against humanity committed by apartheid Israel, we are still sending a message, we are still celebrating Israel Apartheid Weeks, and we are saying no more. We want an end to this deadly, medieval hermetic siege imposed on Gaza, and there is a responsibility, a moral and an ethical responsibility, on the international community, in fact, to lift this deadly siege by boycotting apartheid Israel, by divesting from apartheid Israel, and by imposing sanctions against it, exactly as it did against apartheid South Africa in the 70s and the 80s. We know very well that what we are going through is far, far worse than what black Africans of South Africa witnessed under apartheid in the 80s. But that time, the international community actually heeded the call made by the anti-apartheid movement and boycotted apartheid South Africa. And what we are saying is that we want the international community to heed our call made by the overwhelming majority of Palestinian civil society organizations to the international community to boycott apartheid Israel until it complies with international law. We're not calling for any political solutions, be it two-state solution or one-state solution, but rather we want Israel to abide by international law and withdraw its occupation truce from the Arab lands it occupied back in 1967, implement United Nations Resolution 194, which calls for the return of all Palestinian refugees to the towns and villages from which they were ethnically cleansed back in 1948. And we also want an end to Israel's discriminatory policies that it practices and exercises against the Palestinian citizens of Israel itself.
In the Gaza Strip, right, this year particularly, this year,
yeah,
how do you see that the Apartheid Week, is there any kind of momentum that has increased?
Excellent, because the first time we held IAW activities was back in 2009. We were a handful of people, and we couldn't advertise for it because we, as you know, all BDS activists in Gaza and actually in Palestine are volunteers. But After that, we managed actually to get a more momentum when we started coordinating our activities with international BDS activists. For example, as you know, and you are working for, you are reporting for Electronic Intifada, and Electronic Intifada has been reporting on our activities as BDS activists in Gaza. 2 years ago, we had the first joint musical project between the Gaza Strip and South Africa, and the outcome was the video clip and the song The New Black, and we had a video conference where we launched the video clip. We had this video conference between Soweto in Johannesburg in South Africa and the Gaza Strip. But this year, as you know, as I told you, the first day of the Israeli Apartheid Week was launched by having, recorded video messages by the anti-apartheid activist Ibrahim Ahmed Kathrada and the BDS activist Omar al-Barghouti. But then we also showed a fascinating documentary that looks at the analogy between apartheid and Zionism, Palestine and South Africa under apartheid. A documentary made by an anti-apartheid activist titled Road Map to Apartheid, and we showed this documentary in one of the refugee camps, the 8 refugee camps of the Gaza Strip. Today we are supposed to have an activity in support of farmers and fishermen, and this is the first time that we as BDS activists and Israel Apartheid Week activists have such an activity where we go beyond the student and the youth sector and show solidarity with other sectors that have been suffering from the siege. And the most important sector that has seriously and really been suffering from such war crimes committed by apartheid is the farmer sector and the fishermen.
That was Dr. Haider Eid being interviewed by Rami El-Megadi in Gaza. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, and pointed opinion and analysis by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. You can also post comments and sign up for our daily email digest. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and on behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.